I'm Ted Baker. This is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast, episode number 36. It's the Bart and the Syracuse Orange, 4 o'clock Sunday in the Dome, talking with the head coach of the Statesman, Greg Raymond. Welcome back.
Thanks, Ted. Happy to be here, man.
15-12 loss at Cornell earlier this week. Sometimes you go out, you play a team, and they beat you, and you tip your hat to them and say they're the better team. I don't think you think that way about this game, probably.
No, not at all. We're very, very frustrated and passionate about the way we lost that game, Ted. And I'm grateful that we have a team that understands playing well against Cornell is, or getting close against Cornell is not even close to what we want to be or where we want to be. So we've been very honest with our men about the way that game went, and why it went that way, and how disappointed we are in how it went that way. So I think they've responded very well to numerous challenges, and I'm anxious to see another highly competitive practice today, and what types of lessons we've learned going into another competitive game Sunday that we aren't going into hoping to play well and show well. That's not anything that a Hobart lacrosse player should think, a Hobart lacrosse fan should think at this point. If we don't win the games we play, it is a failure. And we need to find passionate and, again, very meaningful ways to correct those failures.
People will look at this game and say it got away in the third quarter. I'll see if you agree with me. I thought when you lost it might have been the first quarter when you caught them really not playing very well at all, and it was 2-0 when maybe it should have been 6 or 7.
Absolutely. I think you did a great job evaluating that game, Ted. We could we should bring you into our office to watch film. I think what we wanted to do from an in between the lines and a riding standpoint was working. And then when we got the ball, we didn't clear it well. I think we our spacing and the balance that we worked on so much over the week, it got influenced by maybe some energy, some passion, some success we were having. I'm not sure, but what you had in a really good defense and what you had in a really good offense in Cornell, we tried to combat with some stuff we do in between the lines. So I think one of the most frustrating parts was allowing them to stay in that game and allowing them to feel like, hey, we're not playing great, but you know, we're down 2 or we're down 1, we're down 3. And then, you know, what we provide them at the end of the second quarter going into the halftime, going into half is, you know, momentum shifting, infuriating, you know, however you want to put it. And, you know, we have a few guys out with some sickness stuff, Ted, and some guys that we could have used that, you know, there were some young inexperienced mistakes made at some pretty critical times. So where we did give Cornell momentum back, I think we learned great lessons for a young player or players in scenarios that will benefit us greatly down the road.
You talked about the clearing plays, and my son, who helps me out on the broadcast, made note there was one play where he had a young long pole makes a great play, comes across midfield, and he's absolutely hung out. There's nobody around him, and my son said it looks like all the offensive guys just kind of ran down and set up in their positions, forgetting that there was a long stick foundering out there, and you know, David Mapstone always used to talk about supporting that guy with the ball.
Yeah, and you know, so one phrase that we developed after this game was if we're not in the right spots on the field and if we're not balancing the field offensively and in our clear in particular, then possession's in jeopardy. It just is. If we don't have guys in designated spots or spots that we think are the best for us to advance the ball and to possess the ball, if they're not in those right positions, it's going to be very hard for us to do so. So we watched a ton of clips where your son, I think where your son's comments come from, where we're saying, where are we? Where are you? You know, this is where you're supposed to be, but we're not. And so I think we faulted in some execution just based on not being able to transition to specific points on the field or specific parts in our game. That, again, I think the most frustrating part of that game, Ted, is how often we communicate these things, how often we practice them, and how poorly we executed them.
This is the part that really puzzled me. There were several moments in the game where it just didn't seem like the team was ready. One example, Holtby tries to clear, doesn't get there, the whistle blows, and then he doesn't get back to the goal, the defense doesn't get back to the goal. End of the half, there's a contested backup along the back line. They get it on what we didn't think was a very good call, but anyway, they get it, and they just run to the front of the goal and score. It just seemed like there were times that your guys weren't ready when the whistle blew.
Yeah, a couple of those mistakes by the youth that we talked about or some inexperience that we talked about, but a couple of those mistakes are experienced players. So if you look at that goal, that was their first goal, Ted, where Kevin Holtby doesn't run the ball over our midline ever. You see us play more than anyone. So why that's happening against one of the best teams in the country, I don't know. I do know. We're not executing our clear correctly. And that's their first goal of the game. The goal at the end of the half not only provides them momentum, but gets them back in a position where now it's not 5-3 going into the third quarter, it's 5-4. And they also get an opportunity to face off again and get possession of the ball again. So that is terrible clock management, and it's terrible what we call efficient beating of the whistle. And then we dive for a ball to gain possession, which I love, on the sideline. And they pick up the ball. They put it back into play as there's some discrepancy with an officiating's call and whose ball it was. And they're ready to attack the goal faster than we're ready to defend. So, I can say that we've talked about these things and we've coached them in those moments, but we obviously haven't done a good enough job. And so, Ted, you're a very smart guy. I mentioned three specific goals, and you can tell me right now how many we lost by. Three. So, you act like they go up 7 or 8 and, Cornell beat us down a little bit. They didn't. We lost by 3. We lost. This is a game of runs. They went on a run in the third quarter, and I'm proud of Adam Shea and our guys for fighting back and getting possession of the ball in the fourth quarter. And then we go on a run. So you take away those three goals, that game's tied going into 2 minutes left. And so those are stinging mistakes that, as coaches, we need to do a much better job making sure our guys are prepared for those situations and those positions.
Let's talk about a couple of positives. You mentioned Adam Shea. He was having a tough day. Sometimes, it's great when you're winning everything and you're on a roll, but it's harder to fight back when you're having a tough day and contribute in the fourth quarter like he did to launch that comeback.
Yeah, and I think it speaks wonders to Adam Shea's bounce back is the exact format that we, and emotional standpoint, we want our team to project every game. In that the play that just happened does not matter right now, right? The play that you're a part of does. And so, and we believe us to be, case in point, look at our offense when we give them the ball. Look what, Johnny's capable of, and Brad and Arch and Tommy and all these guys are. Tommy doesn't have a ton of points in that game, but I'm not sure anybody saw him cutting and moving off ball and what he did for the structure of our offense. So we have these good parts to the whole, Ted. And I think if emotionally we can figure out what power there is in the next play, and Shea shows a great perspective on that. And he kept coming off the sideline, looked a little frustrated, and he'd say something about what the Cornell guy's doing. And we looked at him and said, we don't care what he's doing. You're a very good face-off guy. Go beat him the next time. And then there's sometimes he'd come off and he'd go, he beat me. He just beat me right there. Perfect. Go get the next one. And so I think if we can tie up some of these unforeseen and silly errors, and then we can still maintain that emotional standpoint, then anything's possible.
You mentioned Tommy Mott. Were they doing anything special to him? He got his first shot of the game with a little over 3 minutes left. He had no shots in 56 minutes.
Yeah, well, nothing special other than number 77 for Cornell is exceptional. He's just he's a terrific defender, probably the best cover guy we'll see. And if you're not putting your best cover guy on Tommy, then you're not doing your work as a staff. He's very difficult to cover. And so I think 77 did a great job. And I think what in Tommy's frustration, that's what we love about Tom is he came to the bench a few times, and he's like, "What do you think? Well, you know, what should I be doing?" And we're like, "You're doing it, man. Keep moving the ball. Don't feel like you have to make plays. Just make the right play." And yeah, I think I could show you a couple of clips of Tommy's flash cuts and how he drags backside support in his movement off ball, and we watch it and go, that's as good of a goal for us, you know, and we're scoring because of it, Ted. I think, you know, to the people that aren't in the arena a little bit, they're like, "Oh, Tommy's got to step up." Tommy did a good job, man. He did. And would we liked him to score a few? Sure. But, you know, what we don't get in him, you get Johnny Herlihy isolating by himself on a short stick and finishing the ball, which he should. So I think there's some balances to Tommy here and there and what he did that night. But there are some times when you play these great opponents, Ted, that they have phenomenal defensive impact players that you have to put in different situations. And if we were just going to keep dodging Tom, it wouldn't have worked out great. He would have got a couple, but, you know, he also would have got frustrated. The offense would have lacked in movement and this and that. So you look at that game and Coach Brundage goes, "Listen, if 77's covering you, you're going to have to be an off-ball player." And that's the way it goes, because on ball, that's where he is exceptional. And so, and you play Cuse, you play Bryant, you play St. Joe's, you play Duke, whoever. They all have a guy that's very tough to beat. And so what you got to do system-wise makes him less impactful in the game.
How much do you take out of the comeback? I mean, it obviously wasn't enough, and you don't take moral victories, but there was at least some fight in a situation where it could have just been a real beat down, and the guy said, "We're not going to let this happen."
Yeah, no, I'm proud as hell, man. Can I say hell?
Yeah.
Okay, great. I'm proud as hell. You know, I but I'm not surprised. That's who these guys are. We're never going to quit. I mean, there's nobody on this team that has that in them. We've asked them to be different since the moment they got here, and they were different before they got here. So that's the underdog mentality that we have, Ted. So I wish I could go into. And this might have been my first year, you know, or my second year, where I'd go into a locker room and say, "Hey, man, I'm so proud of the way we fought." And I said that after this game, but I quickly followed up with, "But I'm not coaching a bunch of fighters here. I'm coaching winners. I know that. We've changed the trajectory to, if we don't win, like you said, there ain't no moral victories. There never has been at this level." But so, yeah, I'm proud of the way that we responded, but I'm proud of this team every single day. Those aren't emotions that ever leave. I'm disappointed that we didn't play well enough to win.
Let's look at Syracuse. They're giving up a lot of goals. Another loss to Army on Wednesday night, but it's a little hard to judge them. They play a very good schedule. But then I thought about it. I said, "Gee, they're playing ranked teams." You've played two ranked teams so far.
Yeah. It's going to be on who plays better that day, Ted. That's the sad truth of this whole thing is there's no crystal ball. You know, you're playing Cuse in the dome. With Gary Gate as their head coach and Dave Petromala as their assistant. I mean, think about that. You know, this is a two-time national championship winning coach, the player of the year, the coach of the national coach of the year, the only person to ever do that. He's the assistant coach at Cuse. And TD Ireland, the best face-off guy ever, is the assistant coach at Cuse. And the guy that we don't even talk about, Pat March, who's might be the best coach statistically, or sorry, X's and O's wise. We don't even talk about him. And so he's a phenomenal coach. So, I mean, you're playing a team that's somehow, because of what the media does, has projected them to have their back up against the wall in their home environment. So it's going to be an awesome game. And it's going to be a game where we know that, yeah, they've given up goals. But we know that their face-off guys around 60%. And we know that they have exceptional offensive personnel. And again, individual defensemen. You know, the Kennedy young man is a great cover defenseman. He's great with the ball and stick. And so it's not about really what they've done in the past, or we're going to do our best to exploit where we feel like they're struggling defensively. We're going to do our best to exploit where we feel like they don't do great things offensively. But that doesn't mean they're not capable of executing. So I think our guys need to recognize that, hey, here's what we're giving you. Okay. Very similar to Cornell. Here's what we're saying is the best way to beat this team. And here's what we think are the best ways to clear the ball. Here's what we think are the best ways to execute on the wings of the faceoff, offensively, defensively, all that stuff. But in that moment, it's up to our guys to do a pretty good job of recognizing time and tempo, flow, and doing all the in-between stuff, Ted. So our guys in the half field defensively, even when we were exhausted, tired in the third quarter against a great Cornell offense, executed well. I think that we have good defensive personnel. Offensively, Ted, I hate to say it, when we had the ball in the half field, we did whatever we wanted to against Cornell. That's how dialed in they were. We had three offensive turnovers. That's the least amount we've ever had since I've been here. So we have it. We have the ability there and there, but are we willing to see how much time's left on a game clock, how much time's left on a shot clock, and finagle an offensive possession so that the ball ends with us and it's not given back to Q? So are we able to make some good quality execution plays on the wings and not determine faceoff possession as, is Shea going to get the ball or not? Are we going to clear this ball every time after a defensive stop so that there's not a ton of scrutiny over Kevin or Shea or those easy ones that it's like, oh, well, he didn't save the ball or we didn't face off. None of those were true against Cornell, and they won't be true against Cuse. It's, can we execute that in between and make sure that we're giving our offense more opportunities to attack the goal? So long-winded way of saying they haven't had great defensive games, Ted, but that doesn't mean they're not capable of having a great game against us.
And I say this every time we have the Syracuse game. I think they punish mistakes as well as anybody. You can't be in the wrong place. You can't get hung out on a clear with a long pole on an island. You just can't do those things against them.
Yeah, very true. I mean, you look at it, that's more so their first six offensive personnel. I if you were to ask my staff, I think Brendan Curry is one of the most dynamic players in Division I lacrosse. He has been, I think, for 3 years. His speed is unmatched. I know that he leads them. I see his emotional balance and poise. I just love him. I think Dordovic is the same from a talent standpoint. So yeah, they capitalize on mistakes. I think I'm more interested in making this about how we play and making it less about what Syracuse can do. We've never been able to do that. I think what the media does, the Syracuse media calls you and all they talk about is Syracuse. And it's like, okay, yeah, he's good. Do you have any questions about our team? And that's always how it's been. That's always how it will be until we change it. And unfortunately, the same circumstances were on Tuesday night. We haven't won at Schoellkopf Field since 1999. And our guys knew that. And so we know what the circumstances are, the Krauss-Simmons trophy here and how unbalanced that rivalry's been, Ted. I think you can hear how hot I am after Tuesday night. I've been emotional all week and in a good way. So our men are going to know that we're going to determine the outcome of this game. And our focus and our execution will determine what that score is and not so much what Syracuse is capable of. I have the utmost respect for what they're capable of, but we have to approach this game differently.
All right, I've had the privilege of calling two Hobart wins in the Dome. I would love to get one with your name attached to it this week.
We're going to do our best, brother. Thank you.
All right, this is the Hobart Lacrosse Podcast. Of course, follow Statesman Lacrosse on Instagram at Hobart Lacrosse, Twitter at Hobart Lacrosse, and All Athletics, HWS, at HWSAthletics.com. Until Sunday, have a great lacrosse day.